I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
It's Mike Schoke and the Bulldog.
How many bees is a swarm? Is two a swarm or three? Whatever. How many does it have to be?
And I feel like seven.
It's Mike Schoke.
How many times do you have to be stung to have been swarmed? And I was like, dude, I got swarmed. I got stung only once, but I was swarmed.
And the Bulldog.
You insist you were swarmed.
There were bees, man. Like, plural. Big, lots of S's. Lots of E's and S. Bees. that was not
bees.
Fun.
Bees.
Right. That was not fun.
On WGR.
Hey, man. That kind of hurt.
Sports Radio 550.
The show where at least one of us dares to predict Kansas City will lose seven games this year. I don't know. I've reserved the right to change my mind, but right now I'm on the under when it comes to Kansas City.
I like it. I don't want my name on it, but I like that you're there. They could be good for us.
The
for
Chiefs,
our branding.
The Chiefs, by the way, in the do you follow NFL fashion advice?
I don't know. No, I
was
don't.
Was it that site that did the poll about the Bengals helmet? I think it was. That's where I came to know about this site. They ranked the Chiefs 18th in uniform power rankings.
Tell me it's because they don't like the fact that there's no stripe on the helmet.
I have no details to back it up. The lack of stripe is perfect and amazing on Kansas City's helmets and a few others around the league. Philadelphia, Rams, Cardinals.
The Seattle also. Still stripeless, or do they have a stripe now?
I think they are. I think they are. I'm not sure, though, actually. I'm thinking of the one in my basement, which is the silver original
right.
Seahawk
right.
helmet that did not have a stripe.
Well, while we're here, I can tell you that a very quick search on Twitter/X, you know, don't you love it when the results you're looking for are like two of the first five things that pop up? I typed in, you were talking last segment, you remember seeing something about 90s uniforms being brought back for the first year in the new stadium starting in 2026. And I said, I don't recall reading anything about that, but I remember around the draft there being something about a uniform series that the league was launching, but I don't have it, you know, buttoned up. Anyway, I type in Bills uniforms 25, and first story up is from sportslogos.net.
Love it.
Bills are considering a return to their 90s throwback uniforms when they move into their new stadium. So there's your story. I didn't click on the story to get the details there, why they are asserting that or reporting that. But anyway, there's that. And then it's like two tweets down from that, Pete Gwelly, COO of Bills and Sabres. Who's excited for a new uniform? This is April 25th, so right around the draft. Who's excited for a new uniform? NFL Nike rivalries coming to Buffalo in 2025. Another look for the final year. So I think that's going to be a specific matchup with a rival, and they'll have special uniforms for them, both sides, I assume.
So it's a league-wide thing. Washington today came out with more throwback-y-looking uniforms for three games. I don't know if they're rivals. I mean, they're playing Seattle in the first of these games, but they're night games. I'm excited about it. This happening. I hope we get this soon so we can talk about it.
Yeah, get an idea of what they're going to look like. Like, I don't know what. I don't even. I mean, I'm scrolling through here to see if there's any other mention and therefore speculation about what the rivalries series jerseys and uniform kits might look like, and I can't find anything yet. I think maybe they've kept it under wraps. I'll bet some people who are really into that part of the league and the Bills have thrown ideas at the wall, but I don't want to just get lost in that labyrinth right now. I'd rather wait for something that's like an actual official leak. So I don't know where we're going, like how adventurous that's going to be or traditional or what exactly it's going to be.
The Bills have never, I think, I'm pretty sure, gone back to their original uniform as a throwback uniform. What have they done for throwback? It's very similar to what they usually wear. The stripes are different. The standing buffalo.
Right.
It's pretty. The shade of blue might be a little different on that. if I'm right, but they've never gone back. Like, you know, the Steelers with the Bumblebee uniforms right. and the Packers,
right.
Chicago, the Jets have gone to like really funky early day versions of their uniform. The Bills have never done the blue and silver.
Right.
That they start the first 2 years, the Bills wore silver pants, light blue, like the Lions. They looked like the Lions. And that was intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Ralph Wilson, Detroit, he liked that look. So silver and blue. And I would love that. How, you know, tricked out would we be by that? How rattled would we be as fans seeing the Bills show up for a game in light blue and silver? Could we handle it? You think we could handle it? This one you want to get out soon so we have time to prepare.
Right, right.
Because they've never, since, you know, 1962, worn anything but their current color scheme, mostly. I mean, of course, in the Bledsoe years, they changed the shade of blue, right? I mean, you've had some variants, but they've mostly always looked the same. But I would love to see the 1960 uniforms make
I really wonder what, you know, I don't want to get lost in guesswork about it. It's funny, just as you're saying the thing about the silver and the blue, I'm coming across a picture of Keon Coleman in a white jersey with silver accents and a silver Bills helmet. Like, just an artist make mock-up here of what a Nickel City rivalry jersey for the Bills could look like.
All right.
First one to weigh in. I don't know. There it is. Sort of coincided with you mentioning their heritage going all the way back to, you know, I bet a lot of our audience, maybe for the first time, learned that the Bills ever wore silver and blue.
And do people know the Raiders were black and gold?
That I didn't know. I always thought they were silver and black.
Original Raiders looked more like the Steelers.
Wow.
Into the mid-60s. Like, right around the same time the Bills changed. I don't know why they did. But, yeah. Early Raiders cards and Bills cards. Which, by the way, were never too, not many action shots in early football cards. Well into the 80s. I had my brother-in-law in town who's a card collector.
You're not counting the offensive player standing there with his left arm out and the football high above his head. That was really only the quarterback. That's not an action shot.
No, that's a pose for me. Yes. My brother-in-law is a card collector and he's been in town the last few days. So it was an occasion for me to get some of my old stuff out. And really, it's kind of incredible how ugly, not the card design so much, but just like how little effort went into the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long time before baseball too. It was a long time before cards started to look like, you know, that's a cool shot. Look up a guy, and I'm sorry, you know, those of you who are driving can't maybe do this, but when you get home, remember a player named John Scorpan?
Sure.
Is that how you say it?
Yep.
Look up.
That's how I remember hearing it back then.
Look up his 1977 card. Can you do that?
Sure, I can.
1977 tops. Like, this one is sort of in a different category because most of these guys are just kind of, it's a headshot. But this guy has a water bottle that almost looks like it's stuck up his nose. It's not the most flattering image.
Oh, yeah, that's
the best they could do?
That's awful.
He's sitting on the
bench.
That's
awful.
Sitting on the bench, he's got his hand all taped up, and he's holding a bottle.
Yeah.
The straw or whatever?
The straw bends towards his mouth, so it's shooting the water in his mouth, but the angle the photo is taken from looks like the straw is going right into his nose.
Yeah. Couldn't do better than that. You're this guy. You've worked so hard.
I'm in the NFL, Mom.
You're in the NFL.
I got my first card. This is like the Almost Famous t-shirts being taken out of the box. Like, we're the shadowy guys in the back. Mom, look at my football card. Why do you have a straw up your nose?
I mean, just...
It's horrible.
Wait 1 second... And have him put the bottle down and then just take another picture. They only took one picture, maybe? This guy, no excuse.
Somebody on the sidelines is shooting rolls of film, and that's the best they got?
I know.
Was Lou Saban in the way every other time you tried to take this guy's picture? Like, what are we doing here?
He was just never, right, he was always obstructed.
Not Lou Saban in 1977, but whatever.
Who would it have been? Jim Ringo?
Yeah, I think
77 Bills?
Yeah,
like, we could do better than this.
Right.
And even, like, when I started collecting in the 80s.
That's so bad.
The 80s set, I can't believe how ugly it is. You know, looking at that again recently, just very little effort went into the pictures until a few years later.
Going through here, I found this one silver kit that you know could be not even close to what the Bills are going to end up doing, but a little more info on this rivalry series uniform that I'm referencing. Here's a tweet from some time back explaining a little more of it. Nike and the NFL have announced Rivalries, a new program elevating NFL rivalry games with specially designed Nike uniforms and fan gear. The AFC East and NFC West will be the first divisions to participate in the program for the 2025 season. So presumably this is games involving, you know, the AFC East, the Bills and the Dolphins, the Cardinals and the Rams, whatever, that kind of thing.
That explains Washington a little bit.
Yeah, they're outside of that. Yeah,
they're outside of that.
Right. They're not involved in this initiative, at least for this year. And well, I think the idea is every year they're going to rotate the divisions, two divisions, one from each conference, and they'll each take a turn at this.
The Bills are in prime time against division rivals in weeks 3 and 5. New England would be my pick for this. I mean, I doubt it'll be identical to their red, the Patriot Pat, or Pat, what's the name of the logo?
Patriot Pat. Sorry.
I'd like to see that. We've seen that a couple times. The Bills' red uniform looked like New England.
I just was reminded of that scrolling through this uniform, again, hole that I have fallen into. And yeah, they wore red shirts, white pants against the Patriots. That was not a great idea, in my opinion, because they looked like the Patriots in their throwbacks, which didn't really jive for me, I think. I don't know. I think I probably had some company in that. So that's uniform talk.
Yes. Uniform.
It's been a while since we've taken the old uniform car out for a spin.
I know. I don't remember the last time. Really, it's about the helmets. I think that would be – I mean, it seems like with the Sabres, you could – get a conversation going about the uniforms anytime you want. Is that still true? Have the Sabres sunk to a point where we're not even talking about the jerseys anymore? I don't think so. But with them, it feels like the fans are always ready to go on goat head, originals, like all the different varieties of the Sabre jerseys over the years. They've had more than the Bills. I think too with hockey. And this I would say about the NBA. In the NBA, you see lots of different variations. Having so many more games
gives you an opportunity.
I'm okay with that.
To do, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead. If you have 82 games and 10 of them, you're just wearing something really different, I think that's fine. But football is, 20% of that. So
yep.
One or two.
As much as I was open-minded eventually about them, the Sabres going back to the black and red design, I feel like having it be like roughly half of your home schedule is a bit much. I think it was around 20 games last year that they wore that, and that's just too much for something that's a change-up. It's like they're in it way too often for me. I feel like it's not that different. Like if it's every other game, what are we doing here? Like it's not that special, I feel like. My recollection is it was around 20, but I might be overdoing that.
Seems
to make
about
the
right
point.
To me.
But it becomes less cool if you're wearing it half the time. It's not a special uniform. It's just a uniform, I think.
Yeah, it almost looks like it's normal.
Right. So.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Not nuts about that. I'm not saying they need to take it away completely, but I just feel like you could make it a little more, a little more special by wearing it less.
There was a time somewhere in the drought with the Bills, I mean, at some very low point, when it had to be during...
Hey, what's up, flies? This is David Spade.
Dana Carvey.
Look, I know we never actually left, but I'll just say it. We are back with another season of Fly on the Wall.
Every episode, including ones with guests, will now be on video. Every Thursday, you'll hear us and see us chatting with big-name celebrities.
And every Monday, you're stuck with just me and Dana. We react to news, what's trending, viral clips.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Ralph Wilson's ownership, maybe 10 years into it, I'm not going to remember.
But I don't know exactly what you're going to say.
There was a time when I was kind of thinking they should just rebrand the entire thing.
Right. Junk everything you've got.
Everything. Change the name, change the colors, change everything. Because I kind of think, maybe this is silly, but I kind of think that when you're losing for so long, and this is the Sabres right now, like the logo and the colors, the whole thing sort of comes to stand for losing. That you see the uniform and, you know, somebody's perfectly able to see the Sabres' current main jersey and think of the French Connection. But that's a long time ago. And 14 years without the playoffs, you know, maybe it just sort of comes to equate to losing. You know, mm-hmm. It seems like that can happen, I think, anyway. So there was a time with the Bills, like, yeah, respect for your history. I came to regret this
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. the history matters a lot in sports. And once you do that, I mean, this never happens, right? But once you do that, you've almost erased it. You're like a different franchise.
The Sabres literally did this.
Well, you know, not with their name.
No, right, but everything else, the colors, the logos, it all went away.
And they won immediately.
That's right.
That's 97. And they had May Day. They had a couple of moments. But really, they've moved. That's a good example of this. Like, that was 10 to 15 years of losing in the first round, just like not getting anywhere, despite, you know, great players and a proud history mm-hmm. and everything. Then they go to the black jerseys in the new building.
Beat Ottawa in the first round.
Division winner, semis the next year, finals the year after that. I mean, they were good.
Yep.
Throughout that, but by the time we got to 04, you know, they come out for that last game in the original blue and gold. And, you know, people were really emotional about that.
Right. Like
that felt great.
That did feel great. But they still then wore the black and red in 05, 06, and then switched everything. And that included the regrettable uniform redesign that was blue and gold. That eventually featured the original logo, but it didn't match the pants because the blue was different from the... It was very confusing.
Well, with the Sabres now, enough already with the Sabres now.
Like, right.
I'm not sure I want to suggest they should do that again.
No.
I mean, it's just, you go to a game and it's the color wheel, like in the crowd.
Right.
It's all kinds of different. It's everything is represented. And, you know, enough already with that. But, yeah, that's right. When they did that, new building even just
right
exponentially, you know, adds, like, you've never seen any of this before. It probably felt like a new franchise. It, you know,
yeah.
To a point, I guess.
To some extent, I suppose. So, yeah, I mean, we'll that's something to maybe, I don't know, when we'll find out. I doubt it's right before the season. Like, at some point here in this dead zone, it might make sense for the league to leak some of these uniform designs and which games are going to be featured. Is it the Dolphins game in week 3 or the Patriot game in week 5 or even the Jet game, which is at the Jets at 1:00 on a Sunday, so I'm going to rule that one out. Those other two games are night games against your division rivals. I bet it's one of those two for sure, early in the year, Dolphins or Patriots, prime time.
Well, you are seeing some of that today, just not in the same exact
right
category, but that's what Washington and New Orleans did. New Orleans with the white helmet. I'm fine with that.
I am too. It's funny how much, you know, Steve Bennett is a big Saints fan, and I'm following him, and he just couldn't hate this helmet more. Like,
oh, yeah?
what are you doing? The other one is iconic. Just wear it all the time. And I'm over here going, I kind of like the white helmet. I like when the Saints, if they're going to wear the white helmet with like the white jersey with the bold gold and black trim, I really like that.
Me
look.
Too.
I think it's a very good look.
Me too. Yeah, some, like, the Browns come to mind here. And they have a long history. And way back, a lot of winning. But, I mean, come on, it's before the Super Bowl was invented. The Browns.
Yeah, that's right.
And,
yeah.
You know, the name is famous and the look and everything like that. They haven't changed it too much.
Right.
But that could be a team where you'd... Maybe propose.
Junk it all.
Could we just start fresh with different everything? The Browns are talking about a dome.
Right.
This is one of those
suburbs, too.
You're
yeah.
testing. the idea of the Browns playing in a dome is really hard to imagine. just like it would be for the Bills, you know, or the Chicago Bears. Like it's almost the rules are different for certain teams when it comes to this stuff. I'm putting that kind of in the same category where you can't be allowed to do it.
Right.
It might make sense, but you because of what you represent as a franchise historically, you cannot be allowed to play in a dome. Right. Sorry. It's fine if the Lions do it, or it's fine. Maybe that was weird when that happened.
I would say the same thing because I'm thinking about that. You know, I was about to say you can't come from having played in Cleveland Municipal Stadium and go to a dome, but the Vikings are on to a second dome already after having grown up playing in a place as, you know, dumpy as Municipal Stadium. The Met was, you know, a weirdly shaped. It was an odd duck for a stadium.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Because the teams were on the same sideline.
Yeah. The whole thing just looked weird. The way the stand, it just was not a classic bowl stadium is all I'm saying, really. But it was configured for baseball and football, both the Twins and the Vikings.
I mean, have you ever been to a football game where the teams were on the same sideline?
Never one time.
High school or anything. You never see that.
No.
Minnesota had that. Yeah, I guess there could possibly be old-timer Vikings fans who... It's never been the same since 1984, whenever it would have been earlier than that. Then they moved into the Metrodome.
Mm-hmm.
The Lions go back like through the 70s.
Right.
Early 70s, they moved to the Silver Mid. The OJ Thanksgiving record is in the Dome.
Yeah, that's right.
75, is that?
Yeah, I think that's 75. Yep.
That had to be weird. Now it isn't. Detroit's been playing indoors for 50 years. Like,
right.
What's the difference, I guess? All right. Well, when we hear anything about this, when the Bills might wear something new, we will certainly tell you and talk about it. We'll be eager to talk about it. You can tell. 803-0550 is the number. We talked a little bit about their defense earlier and what to expect this year. McDermott, Bean, some bigger stuff. We can get back to that. Probably should. We'll do that after sports. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR. Welcome back. We had a good conversation earlier with a Texans guy, John Harris, sideline reporter. Sal knows him. He's been on with Sal a lot. And I didn't know until today that he had a book that he wrote about clock management, which I'd love to read a book about clock management.
You would.
I should have written one. If I had any ambition, I would have written it. I mean, it was music to my ears. He said so many things that I've thought and said and we've talked about for forever, you know? Like, the point that he made that you hear people make about Madden players, Greg Williams was the Bills coach when I was making that point. Like, just get somebody who plays video games that knows how to manage the clock and how to use their timeouts, because this guy doesn't. And that didn't happen. And, you know, it took forever for football, like all the sports, I guess. We talked a little bit about this kind of thing yesterday. Get to a point where they bothered, really, that's the word. They bothered with the strategy stuff. And instead it was, you know, John Harris earlier made the point, again, it's correct, how, and he was a coach, he said. And the last thing you would ever learn coming up as an assistant and doing all the, you know, the other jobs along the way on the career path would be this.
The actual mechanics of running the game.
That's right. When to use timeouts, when to use challenges, fourth down, all that stuff. And so why wouldn't it always have made sense for the NFL to use people who do know that stuff instead of just assuming that because he's your head coach, he would know what to do.
Right.
Like, why would that ever make sense?
Sort of thrown in with the meal plan. Like, you're our coach. You're in charge of that. I hope you know how to do it. Good luck.
It is. It is what happens. Like, I think of baseball first, but certainly true in the other sports. Basketball, definitely. It's gotten so specialized. Like, all the stuff. I mean, I haven't thought of a fraction of it before it showed up. But all these kinds of things, teams now usually get it right, you know? And, you know, maybe saying it that way, that's not how everybody would put it. Like, some of it's, much of it's still debatable, right? This kind, these kind of strategy points. But like basketball teams just shooting threes constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's worth 50% more. Why not just shoot threes? All we have to do is make, you know, two out of whatever. Like,
right.
The math,
sure,
defends
we,
it.
We can still argue about, you know, its effectiveness in every scenario. You know, we talked about this, when we did talk about this yesterday, right? McDermott would make the point, and I think he even made it with us last year, talking sort of in depth about this sort of thing, which we appreciated. You know, it's opponent specific. We're meeting during the week to figure out, like, what is this team good at? What are their tendencies? What do we have that can offset that? And do we want to lean on that in a specific, you know, scenario, you know, in a down and distance and all that kind of stuff? But what we have not seen, I don't think, really, is a team in any of the sports that has entirely said, enough with the math. I don't want to hear it anymore. I played, right? We're going to do it the way that, you know, my dad did it in 1974. That has not happened, at least that I can make an example of and hold up here, and I doubt that it will. Like, it's just, it's, the revolution is over. People are still fighting the war, but it's been decided.
It's the Steelers a little bit, but not that, you know, blatantly, right? What are we talking about? You know, fourth and short?
Sure, yeah. And just all of it. Like, I'm sure, whether or not they operate game to game, down to down, in a way that meets with the approval of the analytics world, would it not be stunning to learn that they don't have a team of analysts telling them these things? Like, of course they do. Every team in the league has one. You know, that there might be like dust on the nameplates because the team doesn't really. It's a sort of a nod to going with the flow. Like, oh yeah, sure, we've got an analytics, you know, department. How robust is it exactly, Russ? but I think everybody is paying attention to that part of it. I don't think you could be keeping up with the times if you aren't.
Yeah, and I started to say, while I appreciate that, you know, that the Bills, it took the Bills a while, but I very much appreciate, okay, like now we're cooking when it comes to this stuff with them. It's a little boring.
Sure.
If everybody does it, it's a little boring. Like, sports have to change the rules to offset these kind of data-driven, newer strategies. That's, baseball is the one for this. The shift, you know, the size of the bases, how many times you can throw over. These are all things that they changed because teams had gotten smart. It didn't look great, and it's boring that they never stole or bunted, right? Because that's the stuff you sit there eating your peanuts at, right, the game and talk about.
And that balls hit sharply to the outfield that were hits the first 50 years of your life are now outs because there's a second baseman playing short right field. And you're like, ah, that was jarring for me. I mean, the show ever sounded older. Every time that happened until it stopped, it was like, that should have been, oh. It was exasperating for me as a baseball fan.
Well, it'll come down to, these things will come down to, like, that point. Not just, it'll come down to the entertainment piece, mm-hmm, you know? Like, thinking about our conversation yesterday about fourth down and teams going for it more often and how much easier, I want to say, the early downs can seem if you're planning to go for it on fourth, to get to fourth and short. So you would do that. What if everybody does that now? And punting becomes rare, not this year, but over time, punting becomes rare. You'd only punt if it's fourth and 25 or something like that. What if we get to a point where everybody's so good at this that punting, you only have it like a couple times a game or something? Would they do anything about it? Would we like it because punting is boring and this is better? Would we necessarily like it? Or would it be, your word, jarring? Like, would it be, We got to get back to some better equilibrium where teams really have a decision to make.
Yeah.
Because now we're venturing into a point where, like I said yesterday, we talked about, it's to be expected that a team is going to go for it. And there's really not much to talk about it. And you can't have the argument anymore. Because here, I've got a piece of paper that says my win probability is greater if I do it. So what are you going to say back to me?
I don't care. I still didn't like it.
Yeah, that's all you can do is sort of like, I don't care about your math. Right. I just, and that's kind of what we used to sound like.
Right.
So I wonder if it would ever, if football would get to a point where, maybe there's a better example for this that I'm thinking of. If everybody goes for two all the time,
mm-hmm.
do they just sort of what? Make it only doable under certain conditions, the score, ban the extra point. I mean,
yeah,
ban the two-point.
I don't know.
I yeah. wonder what, because it's kind of all gone pretty, it's gone well. I mean, it's gone in the right direction, but that's how baseball seemed too.
And then it got too far and they had to make some changes to try to sort of get back the people like me who are saying it was jarring when a ball that you watched be a hit for 40 years suddenly is not a hit anymore. Like,
this is why you stopped watching the Rays. Not the stadium, because suddenly there was a team that was shifting all the time.
Right.
You got to see this. It was cool, though. When it was new, and you had one team, and we're debating like whether or not it's a good idea. I mean, the shift wasn't invented by the Rays. It goes back forever.
Sure.
But like so obviously like that, you know, not using a left fielder when a left-hand hitter is up and just having five infield, stuff like that. When it was new, you wanted to see it. And, you know, think about it and talk about it. Then it was like, all right, on every single play, my third baseman is going to go play right field if there's a lefty up. And, man, maybe we got to fix this. Which, I didn't like the idea of banning the shift.
Taking it away? Yeah.
But I can't.
I did. Yeah.
You did.
Yeah.
Because it just didn't seem like how it should naturally happen.
We're evolving and we've learned that this is more effective. So why does this player have to be on this half of the field?
Yeah,
they decided. I think, you know, I like it, but nonetheless, yeah. the punting though, I don't know, man. Like, you're still, I think we're and you're not saying different. I think we're a long ways away from teams going for it on 4th and 5 at their 30 or something. Like, I still think that there's going to be plenty of punting. And not that I would miss it necessarily. I mean, I don't think I've ever watched a game and thought, boy, this game really could use one thing, more punts. But, you know, I don't think I need to see it eradicated either.
Well, this is a long ways off probably, if it ever happens. Matt's next. Hello, Matt.
Hey guys, how you doing? You know, one thing with the analytics that I've always, looked at is that when they're talking about percentages, they're talking about percentages over like huge sample sizes, not like, you know, a single game or like a couple plays in a game or even like a season. So if you're looking at something that says like 54%, then yes, analytics favor it. But, you know, on any individual play or, you know, even in the season or game or whatever, those analytics don't necessarily aren't going to play out like five out. You could not get them any of the times you go for it. And then maybe the next game you get it all the times you go for it. So on any, you know, it's like kind of flipping a coin. If you did it 50 times, you're not always going to get 25 and 25. But if you did it like 50,000 times, it's probably going to be, you know, a lot closer to 50-50.
So what do we do about it? Is your point that it shouldn't be as popular?
Or? That's a good choice, you know, most of the time. But at the same time, you know, you could make the right decision and still get fired as a coach because they didn't work out during a season.
Oh, of course, sure. I mean, that's everything in sports, right? Like, that's the draft, too. It's got to work. But at least this way, you can defend it in a, like, a logical, provable way. Where before, you couldn't, and nobody tried to. All that sufficed was, all that, you know, coaches ever talked about was, like, they know from experience. And, I mean, it's not really that long ago that this kind of thing was just an absolute foreign concept. What are you talking about? You know, you'd get, I know it from experience, you just get dismissed because of who you are and what experience you lack, not what you're saying.
Yeah, who you are and what you're not.
Right.
Mostly.
Right.
Yeah.
But then not what you're saying, and that's no good.
Right.
So, I mean, the fact that it's years, that's always been true. It's right. It's years of data. And that's worth something, you know. But, of course, it will not always work. We know that. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. Thanks, Matt. We'll have Paul Hamilton on at 6. This is WGR. Thanks for listening or watching.
Oh, sure.
We have new lighting in here this week. Right over there. I have still not... Today's a little easier because the light is
over there.
Closer to me.
Yeah.
But the last 2 days, I had not figured out how best to get out of here, whether to go basically between the light and the table or around the light. I was having that problem yesterday.
Yeah.
But today...
It's alleviated.
The light has been moved.
Okay. Good.
And I'm happy about that, for one.
Good. I think my face looks a little less red.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting is helping, I think. So I'm thumbs up.
Another Warren Sharp plug for you.
All right.
He ranked running back rooms today. How do you think the Bills did? If you didn't see it.
I did not see it. I'll bet the Bills are in the top 10.
Not quite.
Mm. Why does Warren Sharp hate the Bills? 803-0550.
That's what everybody's asking.
Okay. Where do they come in?
12th.
Who's better?
12th seems generous. I wouldn't have predicted top 10. I don't think I would have ranked them top 10. I haven't done this.
Yeah.
You know, thought experiment here, but running back.
I'm Dana Carvey.
I'm David Spade.
Fly on the Wall's back for another season now on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
So many incredible guests will be joining us.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Too good to be true.
Room is interesting too, because I wonder if you get penalized for not having depth. Like if you have Bijan Robinson, well, they have Algier. Who's a better? Barkley. Is Barkley's your running back room? You know who the backup is right now in Philadelphia?
Kenneth Gainwell.
He left. Will Shipley.
Darren Sproles.
And Darren Sproles. Will Shipley is number two. Like, that's who you draft as a Barkley handcuff. Right,
okay.
Now.
All right.
And they're ranked second. So they're not being penalized for this, apparently.
Weighed severely for the starter being having such prowess. Yeah. I thought the Bills would rank good well because they've got all the roles filled pretty capably. You know, I mean, yep. Cook is not, he's not a horse, but they don't need him to be because they've got Ray Davis, and they don't need him to be a third down back because they've got Ty Johnson. And I think those are good boxes to have checked. I'm not delusional. I don't think about Cook's value within the league. Like I, you know, where did he come in some ranking already this week? Eighth or something. I don't even know that I would say him on his own top 10. But the room, I would have thought. But I'm not analyzing this in the criteria that Warren obviously is.
The Bills maybe get more credit than most for the players they have behind Cook.
I think that's what would...
Two guys.
Would help a lot, yeah.
Lions won. The Lions have both. The Lions have... I mean, Gibbs, I think, is a star. And they have Montgomery. So they've got both. They've got the great running back and then the very good compliment to him.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, it's just Barkley. Atlanta is third, Robinson. Algier is pretty good to go with him, but,
sure. You
know, it's Bijan Robinson. Should probably play all the time. Baltimore, Henry, and then Miami is fifth. That's interesting.
What is that now? Achan and what?
So they have Jalen Wright
right. From
last year's draft, but he did nothing as a rookie, really. Like, I'm not even sure he's safe. Ollie Gordon... from the draft, late pick or not even picked. I think he was a late pick. I'm not sure. Mostert left
right. For
Vegas. Raiders seventh here, by the way, with Genty and Mostert. And I think that's kind of it for Miami. I'm maybe forgetting somebody. But thinking of drafts, like, Jalen Wright does get drafted as a backup, as a contingent value if Achan goes down or something. That's kind of it, though. That's a little high for me.
Yeah.
Is he great?
I'm just buzzing over to their depth chart here. And Alexander Mattson is there as well.
Right.
He was a free agent from Vegas. And this draft pick you mentioned, Gordon, was a sixth-round pick.
Mattson never gets drafted.
Yeah. So that's it. There's one other guy, street free agent, it's Nate Noel. But who's great? Achan?
Achan.
I don't know.
Last year, his efficiency tanked a little bit. That whole offense tanked last year. But, man, as a rookie, He was dynamite. Against the Bills, both games, too.
Yeah.
Two touchdowns in the first game. That's coming off the 70 points. And then in the finale, is that the same year?
I think so, yeah.
He had a great touchdown run in the game against the Bills, week 18, HN. Maybe he's great. I don't know. He's still young. The Rams come in 13th. Bills 12th, Rams 13th. When did we do yards per carry stuff? Was that yesterday or Monday? The Rams were near the bottom of the league.
Mm.
The Rams are weird. Kyren Williams plays the most snaps of any running back in the league. Not that he's super big either, but, you know, he's big enough, can handle the work. But under 4 yards a carry, I think, as a team. And for backups, you've got a couple of young guys that haven't done anything yet. Blake Corum.
Right.
And then Jarquez Hunter from this year's draft. But it seems high.
Yeah, that room being one behind the Bills makes the Bills seem to me like they should be higher.
Okay. The Jets are behind the Rams. Man, I think their guy is great, but Breece Hall. That's at Warren Sharp on Twitter, at Sharp Football. He'll be on the show on Monday. Paul is coming up next. We'll talk about Alex Lyon and the Sabres for a little bit. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here, WGR.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.